Well, Charlie's not here, I don't think.
What?
No, you didn't clap or anything. I didn't hear. I didn't see your thing light up.
Of course I clap.
I didn't see it light up. How am I meant to know? I thought maybe your computer crashed or something. I don't know.
All right.
Good start.
Yeah, that was the start.
Hello, everyone. I'll take it from here. I'll fix this intro, this mess, this sloppy, unprofessional pile. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the best podcast on the internet. I will say that with full sincerity, because how many other groups of man friends could talk about absolutely nothing important for however many fucking episodes we've done this and been consistently perfect with an incredibly handsome audience? And to keep that momentum going, here's Jackson with a wonderful topic.
Also, let's just do another clap sync. Jackson's made me paranoid. Count us down, Jackson.
What, did you clap or did you not?
I did, but not, if it didn't, maybe it didn't get picked up on audio or something.
Well, just, I mean, just, you can see it on your audio. It doesn't matter if I saw it or not.
We're going to run it back just to be safe. Plus, this will be a really cool intro anyway, right,
this,
a double clap.
This is the way of Charlie throwing me under the bus, by the way. He absolutely didn't clap. And now he's trying to gaslight me into thinking I'm the bad guy.
No, I did clap, but smart. If you didn't hear it, that makes me a little concerned.
Mm.
All right, after one. 3, 2, 1.
I put a little extra elbow grease on it. Did you hear it?
Were you guys watching him? His thing didn't light up again. I'm not even joking.
Okay, then,
no,
then
I
there's...
didn't watch him.
Then there's something gone awry, but that's two claps now.
And then we still on the same intro though. We've used the intro already. Danny's gonna like place that. No, just
Danny's
just leave the recording
this entire thing in. Leave this entire
this
thing.
This is the entire episode, and it perfectly encapsulates Andrew's point. No, you. Well, yeah. If he. Oh, yeah. True. The first clap would still be there. Realistically, don't clap again.
This is third.
No, that's too many claps now. You fucked it.
Now we have to do it again.
Just to mess with Danny.
Then he's gonna have to bring his A game to this one.
That's right.
Yeah, we've got to be the longest running podcast at this point, right? Most episodes.
Painkiller already.
Yeah. I forgot about PK. I mean, yeah.
Doesn't Joe Rogan also have like 2,000 episodes?
Well, he does it like daily though, right?
What? Oh, so that doesn't count? What the fuck is your point?
No, that's meaningless.
Longest running weekly podcast.
Yeah. We said end of 2016. Which is
no, there's gonna be
ago.
Way more.
If we're talking weekly group, same group podcast, then Painkiller already has us beat by quite a margin.
We're probably not even in the like top 100, because then there's like Rooster Teeth and
no,
stuff.
No way.
Yeah.
That's right, another one. Yeah.
I think even Doug's show is longer than ours and Carl's. Just the two people that I know. We're pretty new. But we can outlast them. What we have on them is we're younger, so one day they're gonna die and we can keep going.
But there's also younger people than us now. Definitely you and Andrew, for sure. Mm.
Oh, yeah, thanks, YouTube. Man. Appreciate
<You're>
it.
<welcome. laughs>
We're gonna die first. I might leave the podcast and my inheritance. Can I leave my seat and my will to a person of my choice?
If that means I don't have to listen to your shit anymore, Jackson, then good. Fine.
Man, it's fine by
me. I might
me.
Kill myself right now.
You guys ever think about that, though? You and Andrew, specifically?
Killing myself?
No. No. Like,
every
there's people half your age starting podcasts right now, guaranteed, on TikTok.
Yeah. I was talking with Charlie about this, like, a week ago or something. The weirdest thing that hits me really hard with this is I will meet a new creator through one thing or another. So I'll be like, hey, I like your videos. And we'll talk on Twitter or, you know, just hanging out with shit. And we'll be messaging and they'll say, yeah, it's really kind of weird because I graduated college last year and I'm trying to find a good place to live. And I'm like, man, I haven't been in college in like 8 fucking years.
Yeah.
Oh, God. It's just so weird to think about that kind of shit.
At what point
I don't
do you
mind
think
it at all?
At what point? What age do you guys think that you'll age out of content and officially become uncool for doing YouTube?
Oh, I don't think I'm cool now. Who the fuck thinks they're cool for doing YouTube? But I don't
like,
know. I think there's
are you going
ways
all the way to like
them.
Yeah, for sure. You got to pivot though. Are you like Charlie? Do you see yourself doing this until you're 60?
Yeah, until I'm 80. The content you can make at that age, too, unlocks a whole new vertical.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be... It's going to be like shot from the retirement village and stuff. It's going to be depressing.
Well, I think the kind of content that you envision, like that you cannot envision a 40-year-old doing is also the kind of content that makes you cringe even when it's a 17-year-old doing it.
True. Yeah, like pranks and stuff. I couldn't imagine an 80-year-old.
Yeah, like just screaming, fake screaming and stupid pranks and just yelling at the camera on Twitch while you're reacting to Ben Shapiro. It's like, regardless of your age, you shouldn't be doing that anyway. But I don't mind, like, to answer your original question, I really don't mind it whenever I see, like, a very talented person on Twitter, like a 23-year-old who's already making really great music or really great art. I think that's cool. And I'm really happy, actually, that, like, younger people have access to that shit. One downside that I guess we could talk about, though, is that Gen Z is tech illiterate now. I think the middle generation got lucky. Well,
like my generation,
I think they grew up with smartphones, right? Like boomers grew up without technology, basically without computers, right, so yeah. That's forgivable. My mom doesn't know how email works even. Then came our generation, smack dab in the middle, just as technology was emerging, and it was difficult. We had to learn, like, okay, how do I torrent Warcraft 3 and then crack it? Oh, I ruined my computer because it was a virus. Now I have to reformat it. I have to find
a key. Wait. I still think, but like, you're only talking about a small percentage of your generation, though. I still think there's a large chunk of, I don't know, whatever ancient generation you're a part of that is tech illiterate.
Oh. Certainly.
Well, I don't know anyone.
But I still think the percentage is bigger than the new generation. I don't think, like, the average 16-year-old now knows as much as I did when I was 16. Because now you just have smartphones. You just download Temple Run. You don't torrent games.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. You're already showing your age too, by the way, you fucking geriatric. It's not Temple Run anymore, it's all about Subway Surfers.
Wait, Subway Surfers is also outdated, right? Subway Surfers was around like 7 years ago.
No, but that's still the hotness, though. Like, if you go on TikTok right now, a lot of the videos you'll see that are supposed to be, like, informative or something has Subway Surfer gameplay at the bottom to hold interest.
Really?
It's all about Subway Surfers, yeah.
So I was pretty sure that Subway Surfer and Temple Run came out at like the same time, that same kind of period of time.
It kind of did.
Those runners were all the rage.
Yeah, but Subway Surfer is the one that's kind of stood the test of time, that children can't get enough of running through the fucking subway, I guess.
Well, maybe that's the new pivot with content. We should jump on this bandwagon and pivot to Temple Run. It's going to be new and exciting.
Yeah, Danny, can you just bin all of our webcams? Can it just be Temple Run footage?
Yeah.
Subway Surfers. Make sure people have enough stimulation.
Yeah, and jelly, and people like footage of jelly.
Yes, perfect. And cutting up soap.
Put nothing but oddly satisfying GIFs over where my webcam is.
Put hardcore pornography GIFs over mine, please. That's one way to get
on YouTube yet.
But yeah, I agree with Kaya.
Playful kittens.
I agree with Kaya. I think that things are so simple and user-friendly now that when an actual issue arises, people just cannot figure it out. Like, I've got friends who just don't even know how to Google their own questions properly and, like, look for the answer the right way, you know?
Dude, I saw... So I'm not on TikTok, but I do see TikTok, obviously, when it, like, dumps on other social media or somebody sends me one. I saw this one that went viral, apparently, of a girl who blew her followers' minds by reverse image searching.
Oh.
And they were like, holy shit, I knew you could look up photos with text, but the other way around? That's incredible. And I think now that we have AI and everything too, by the way, all the companies are going all in on AI. Like, Microsoft has now laid off 10,000 people, and they're now investing billions of dollars into OpenAI. And they said that they were going to make it basically part of all of their company, all of their products.
Nothing scary about that, right, guys?
Nope.
Hey, I don't worry, Microsoft.
It's going to be integrated into Microsoft Word and whatnot. And
only
Google
3 weeks
also
after
that
debate,
to,
and I'm already being proven right that this is already having an effect on, like, the economy and jobs and stuff like that.
Well, I don't think anyone ever argued that. We just argued that it was going to start murdering people within the next week or something because it could write your book
report.
Well,
it will when Microsoft owns it.
We all unanimously agree, Jackson, that this is going to cause disruptions in the workplace and changes to the economy. It's all streamlining, and this is the same shit that happened with car manufacturers and all that shit.
This is a rewriting of history, and I will.
How far it goes? That's a different story.
It's a new industrial revolution, and it's kind of amusing to watch. There's already like a lot of Reddit threads now of young people, like high school kids and shit, and college kids too, writing these threads like, oh, my teacher noticed that I used ChatGPT to write my essay. What do I do? He sent me to the dean's office. I might get expelled. To which my answer is, first of all, deny it. Well, how the fuck can they really 100% prove it, right? But now they're making AI to detect if something is written by AI or an image is made by AI. It's very entertaining to watch.
But how can an AI already know tell, like, for sure? How can you know for sure that it's generated by AI?
Yeah, the AI could start lying. Like, AI
is trying to fuck this kid over.
You should AI generate your excuses, yeah.
Ooh. Well, that's the thing. You can't. That's exactly how it works. So apparently when AI writes something, obviously it doesn't have like that human touch to it. It's like kind of too clinical. It doesn't have a custom style to it like each writer does. So other AI can detect this. But you can go and tell the original AI and say, hey, make this sound more human. And apparently that works. And that doesn't get detected by the second AI.
Why even do that? Why not just say, like, I was trying to write this like an AI. I wrote this with an AI in mind.
I was trying to be formal.
Yeah, I was trying to be
robotic. Teachers are fucked. I remember back in my day, they had some websites that was, do you guys remember? It was very famous that teachers would use to detect if you plagiarized
a sentence.
Turn it in, yes, thank you. But it was very primitive. You could throw it off by just, you know, you guys know the character sheet on Windows. You could open it up and find like an ASCII character that kind of sort of looks like an A. And you could replace all of the A's in your essay with that symbol. And turn it in, couldn't detect it. It was perfect. I forged entire essays that way and handed them in to my like history teachers and shit. But now, I guess we're going to see how it goes. It's entertaining to me.
Do you ever think about how many doctors there are out there, practicing doctors, that forged their way through college and are currently operating on people or like giving life-altering advice based off forged?
There's got to be a lot.
There's a ton.
Maybe not that many, but have to be. Wasn't there a very famous one, Dr. Death? I think they called him. This guy basically kind of sort of just fucked his way through college, and then he showed up to surgeries literally high on drugs. And he, like, crippled multiple people that way.
You're mixing the names up. Dr. Death was a Kevorkian that did assisted suicides, I think.
Yeah. But there could be someone that you're describing, Kaya, but that's not where the nickname was attributed.
Could be,
But you know, this is the kind of stuff you just gotta not think about if you want a happy life. What do you call a doctor who gets all D's in medical school?
Is this a joke?
Doctor. Oh. They qualify whether they get straight A's top of their class or whether they barely pass. They're still a doctor.
Well, do you pass on a D?
Yes.
Really? No, you don't pass on a D. I don't know where you're getting that from. It has to at least be a C.
I thought it was a C.
What?
Yeah, it has to at least
maybe
be a C.
Maybe for medical school, I guess, but for regular school, I know you can pass
for medical school, I think it would be slightly higher.
I would hope it'd be slightly higher, but it doesn't matter. The specifics of what does and doesn't pass doesn't matter. The point is a doctor could graduate at the top of their class with fucking accolades and everything, or they could barely pass by the skin of their teeth, like this close to failing out whatever the bar is, but they're still a doctor. They still can run a practice and be a called doctor and all of that. You'd never really know unless you personally ask them.
But then they just lie to you.
Yeah, they're good at lying.
Yeah, those liars. Fuck it. Yeah. You guys seen everything that's happened with the Pfizer vaccine all of a sudden? Jesus Christ, we're doomed.
Were we lied about that?
Yeah, and now it's giving everyone the heebie-jeebies. So everyone's shaking all over the place everywhere.
Oh,
it's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Those memes, Well, that's a problem with the experts who would like the doctors. You can find any doctor and you can pay him to say the earth is flat and they will do it. I mean, again, doctors said that smoking is good and a healthy way to lose weight. It's like,
well, that's not really a doctor problem. It's not the problem with doctors. It's just the problem with the system that we live in and people in general.
I think it's a problem. It's a problem with people not recognizing that doctors are not infallible.
Well, yeah.
Someone just says the experts too much, and you're supposed to be...
Yeah. Trust the experts. Believe whoever's a doctor or a scientist. if they're a scientist or a doctor, they're instantly like infallible, which I don't necessarily think is true.
I certainly don't. The main person on Twitter that keeps spreading those videos of people doing the fucking Harlem Shake with the Pfizer vaccine stuff comes from a goddamn doctor.
Well, then which doctors do we trust and which ones we don't? Because
I think a good starting point is a doctor that can recognize what real tremors and seizures look like would be a really great starting
point. But we're not smart enough to know when they're telling the truth mostly or lying.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree. You're right.
Like, this is obviously a pretty obvious case.
I think you can be
case,
smart enough.
Say.
Like, okay, but I think you are smart enough to recognize when Pfizer says, oh, you should vaccinate yourself every month, 12 times a year, and also the vaccine, we're jacking the price up to $150, and we're petitioning the government to make it mandatory to buy it from us. I think you kind of understand that there's like a profit motive there, and this isn't all about science anymore. Most people get that, but you still get attacked if you say, well, I don't trust that expert that just said that. I mean, you were literally, remember, people had their entire YouTube accounts shut down when they said that, the Wuhan virus may have come out of the Wuhan virology lab and not just spontaneously sprung into existence from a fucking bat. And now we know, oh, turns out the conspiracy theorists were right.
Well, only in that case. And we don't know that for sure as well, by the way. We don't know. Because you're just listening to experts that you agree with. Let's say that it did. That's what I'm saying. How do we know which fucking experts to trust? Because none of us do the appropriate research into the data or the surveys or the research information, whatever.
I think that's a cop. I think you don't, and you assume no one else does either.
No, I don't assume no one else does. Sure, there's got to be like one guy that's right at least. There's got to be some kind of actual truth to things. But I don't know how to determine which one's telling the truth.
That guy must be depressed.
Because no one's listening to him.
Because no one's believing him or trusting him. And he's always correct about everything.
But what if it wraps around and he's correct about absolutely insane shit? So he's right
like
about
the
vaccines and
you.
COVID, but then he's like, the aliens built the pyramids. I'm right about that too. I have the evidence. And he's just completely correct. And no one will believe him.
I still maintain there is now a new crop of ufology or uapology that is different from that of like 10 or to 15 years ago. I'm telling you guys, it's no longer just a bunch of hicks with half their teeth missing going, I got kidnapped by a UFO and they put stuff in my butt. It's like actual like smart people talking about this now, and I'm interested, but I'm also not like
smart people are talking about
the stuff in your butts. What got you? Huh?
No, it's like they analyze the government papers that they release a little bit. But it's also something that I don't want to spend that much time reading about. But the problem is, I actually reached out to 3 different people on Twitter about UFOs. And I was like, hey, what's like an easy entry into this? Like, where do I start? Because you guys just, you know, when someone throws around a lot of terminology and inside terms. And
it gets confusing.
Yeah, I have no idea what the fuck.
Why didn't you just ask
me?
I'm super deep into that shit. I check in on those communities often.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm always looking.
Yeah, he's always said that his dad is like...
Yeah, my dad's super into it too.
He's basically a spaceship pilot at this point.
Okay, so does your dad... This is what I read up yesterday. So apparently the Trinity Project in 1945, the first nuclear bomb experiment, because that's significant. It was significant for our human species because we reached the atomic age, right? Our first atomic bomb, yay for us. Their theory is, one of the many theories, that UFO sightings have gone up since then because they may have been dormant vessels on Earth that are basically just meant to observe us as a primitive species until we discover atomic energy and then mobilize to observe us further from the air, I guess.
Yep. So I've never heard that. That sounds like an actual plot to Singularity on the Xbox 360. I would say like the best... stuff to look at is from like the scientists, because there are a couple that do, like you said, legitimately analyze like the files that they keep releasing, like the declassified stuff. But a lot of it's like really just kind of uninteresting, because it'll be like, yeah, it's not extraterrestrial, this is just something we don't really get, but it's certainly from this planet. So it's just kind of like, oh, There hasn't really been anything.
My issue is a lot of the evidence.
So that just means like Russian space.
It means legitimately anything. Any other nation's technology, fucking astronaut farmer built something goofy. Like it just means anything. But they're not ever confirming that it's like something.
So that's but that's always been what's been known. Like that's always been the most logical answer, right? That most people have said.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is by far the most logical, because if it, if any alien species reached us, it'd mean they'd have faster than light travel, which right now we believe is completely impossible.
But so nothing's changed then, apart from just scientists are weighing in on it, basically.
Nope, it's just now that there's like declassified shit, people are actually looking at unidentified objects, as opposed to just like, here's three blimps that flew in a weird formation, probably aliens. Now it's just like people looking at like, oh wow, this is a really interesting flying apparatus that we've never seen before, let's talk about it.
Yeah, it's the government, you know, it used to be, again, they would call everything a conspiracy theory. Yeah. And I guess in more recent years, the government has just openly said, yeah, but we don't know what the fuck this is. And then you have these government insiders, people who used to work for the CIA or NASA or the whatever the hell, they all coming out and saying, yeah, I used to work on these projects. They harvest crash sites for rare materials and yada yada. And the government keeps the patents and they hand them over to Lockheed Martin. My issue is, all of it is just hearsay. It's just he said, she said, in 1970 such and fuck, Bob Lazar claimed that he saw a UFO. It's like, okay, what do I give a fuck what he claimed? Like, how much of this can you actually prove?
Corroborate. Well, that's the thing as well. Like, when you think about it at this scale, like, they're saying, like, there's whole teams going into harvest resources, and then Lockheed Martin's got, like, entire teams working on R&D for it or whatever. That's like so many people where it can get out from. That's why I don't personally believe that kind of stuff, is because like there's just so many points where we should have heard about it, like actual
the amount of people who would blab right about the conspiracy.
Yeah, it's the same thing to me that fully debunks like the moon landing and JFK conspiracies. It's like you can't have that many people involved with such a giant scale thing over all those years and not have someone confess or something really get out, you know.
But it's also a what did I call it? We're like, not everybody has all of the information, obviously. Like, the guy who pulled the trigger on JFK doesn't know that he did it for the FBI.
But you don't know that.
You know, of course I don't, but you don't know that I'm wrong.
Fuck.
Expert said,
now we're going to do this all day.
I'm always for the more entertaining option, whenever feasible and possible.
Yeah, if it's like a 50-50 go with whatever's funnier.
Exactly, thank you. And also, whenever it's 50-50, always assume that the government is evil and will just stab you in the back.
That goes for, like, everything. Know. Corporations, government, literally everything.
Everything. Video game developers. Everything.
Friends.
Experts.
Yeah, family.
Loved ones, pets.
Don't ever leave your room.
Don't trust anyone.
Don't ever talk to anybody.
I don't know, man.
Fuck.
Gotta be paranoid.
What were we saying? I had an anecdote that I wanted to share, but now I've forgotten.
Fuck. Was it about your comfortable underwear?
That's it. Comfortable underwear. Thank you. Love comfortable underwear, but I need you to tell me more about it, Andrew.
That is
tell
exactly what
you're
I will tell you.
You're the expert on comfortable underwear. Please.
I know we just said not to trust anybody, but trust me when I say that MeUndies has an incredible Valentine's Day collection. Do you know that feeling when your crush texts you unexpectedly and you say, oh my God, she might be a government sleeper agent. What do I do? I don't know. I do want to see her titties though, so maybe let's see where this goes. Well, you can find out what it will feel like to have that feeling all day and all night, because you will be wearing the most comfortable underwear with a love theme to it with the V-Day MeUndies collection. MeUndies is pretty straightforward. Everyone on this podcast wears it because they've got incredibly comfortable and cute underwear. Also, if you're a lady with some sort of tits, they've got bralettes. And then for everyone, they've got loungewear. They've even got funny stuff for your pets, which you might want to check out. Available in sizes extra small to 4X. They have something for every booty to fall in love with. Oh, that's so goddamn funny. MeUndies has a great offer for everyone listening. You can get 20% off of your first order and free U.S. shipping right to your door. Now, to get that 20% off of your first order with free U.S. shipping and to chat with their incredible cheek squad about any questions or sizing concerns, you just need to go to MeUndies.com/official. It's a lovely gift. Think about it. You could get it for your mom and have a really awkward and weird conversation. Doesn't matter. But make sure to get a pair for yourself while you're there. 20% off your first order, free sizing in the U.S. Or sorry, free shipping in the U.S. And questions and sizing concerns with the Cheek Squad at MeUndies.com/official. So you got your new underwear. Good for you. Do you happen to have a clean shaven face? No? Well, don't expect to ever find love like that, mister. That's why you're going to need to talk about Harry's. Because Harry's razors are going to give you a fantastic shave, a great quality shave, and they're going to have form-fitting, nice, little sleek packaging to deliver everything you need straight to your door. If you go ahead and sign up with Harry's and get the Truman Shave Trial Set for just $3, it's going to get a 5-blade German-engineered razor. And if we know anything about the Germans, it's that they're incredible at reading children's kindergarten bedtime stories, so they have to make a great razor. It's going to have a weighted handle, come with also some foaming shave gel, and a travel cover. You can schedule replacement blade delivery whenever you need it for as low as $2. Their blades are made in their own factory in Germany and hold up better than ever. They say people who use it say their eighth shave is just as sharp as the first. Also, Harry's is going to offer a no-risk trial, so if you're not satisfied, well, they'll pay for it, and you don't have to worry about it. Why not give it a try? No matter how new your new you is, you're going to want to look sharp with Harry's. Get the $15 Truman Shave Trial Set for just $3 at harrys.com/official, spelled H-A-R-R-Y-S. .com/official for a $3 trial set delivered straight to your door.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a cleanly shaven neck, but not face. Mm. Don't want to be a neck beard. But you do want to have a beard. How do you guys feel about... Wait. Okay, before I steamroll everyone, do you guys have topics?
No, I'm down to hear what you got. Well, Jackson, you wanted to mention something, right, before we moved
yeah,
on?
Yeah, I honestly can't remember. Mm-hmm. It was very tied to whatever we were talking about at the time.
Which was aliens?
Really?
Yeah, it was
aliens,
but something specifically in the alien conversation. Look, it's fine. I'll go back and listen to the podcast after
conspiracy?
We're done, and then I'll remember. Yeah, maybe. I don't fucking know. Just go. Steamroll us.
Oh, no, I was going to ask. This is a few weeks old at this point, but Texas introduced a bill that would ban social media for children under 18. Feeling
good. Do it. Pull the trigger.
It says, this is according to Fox4News.com, a Republican lawmaker from North Texas filed a bill aiming at keeping children off social media. Jared Peterson's HB 896 would require social media users to be 18 years old to create an account. By the way, I've also seen that in Louisiana, if you access Pornhub in Louisiana now, it mandates that you submit your government ID
oh,
in order
to
access their porn site.
Whoa.
What if what if every time you access Pornhub, it was mandated that the phone
calls
takes a photo of your face and uploads it to a registry for everyone to see? Do you think that would
know
stop
your
people
customer
from using
laws
porn?
For porn? Yeah. Well, they tried to mitigate the bad PR, I guess, by saying, well, you're not submitting your ID to the porn site. Your porn site never gets your ID. Instead, you're submitting it to a third party who then keeps a record of it, and presumably one day they're going to get hacked all the same, so no fucking
How is that even... How does that make any difference? Also, like, you didn't tell us who the third party is or anything. We don't know anything about them.
Also, yeah, I don't know them either, but I do know that it is not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Sites get hacked all the damn time. And those guys are going to get hacked eventually. So,
well, of course.
I would recommend you don't do that. Go to ExpressVPN and switch your region away from Louisiana if you want to jerk off that badly. But yeah, I'm also in favor of this bill. The to ban kids off social media. I think there needs to be a healthy balance of, like, as we just talked about, I think children are already unhealthily disconnected from technology. They're too clueless. They need to learn this stuff, but also social media is a horrible way to learn it.
See, that's the irony. That's the irony. If they're that disconnected from technology, yet their lives are more and more on the internet now, you know?
Yeah, well, they're not users of technology. They're consumers. There's a difference.
True.
That's a good point.
They don't actually, like, use their technology. They sit the same as us, by the way. They sit there.
The technology uses them, bro.
Yeah, they sit there looking at the screen. They're not actually engaging with the technology.
They're eaters.
Yeah, we're all gluttonous pigs now.
Yeah.
Well, I saw the movie The Menu. That movie is so fucking good, The Menu.
Oh my god, is it actually time to talk about something good on this show? As in, like, something that...
No, we have to keep complaining about what's trending on Twitter, Jackson. That's 99% of our show.
Yeah, I'm going to tie this good thing into a bad thing. So The Menu is great, but kids should not be online. Kids are fucking stupid. They're not ready for social media. And they make it just worse.
This guy
kids
gets
shouldn't
it.
Be allowed to watch The Menu. They're not allowed good things. They have
I mean, it's an R-rated
first.
Movie. How about Don't this? Let your kid watch The Menu.
Oh, okay.
I'm introducing Bill HB 007. Ban kids from YouTube, nice. Kids. I was with my girlfriend on a train back from Amsterdam to Germany, and I was in a wagon with two separate mothers with... I think a total of like 4 children, and they were all on YouTube Kids on their iPads. And all it is them on their sippy cups watching that fucking schlock.
I know,
and the mother's completely clueless. She has no idea what's going on. It just makes like coin sounds, like the bling, 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 ka-ching sounds. And it's just random garbage playing on the fucking iPad.
But that's 5 minutes of peace for that mother.
It's a very common phenomenon, Kaya. I don't know if it's less common where you are, but in America, I see it all the fucking time everywhere I go.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
It's
not just 5 minutes of peace,
yeah.
By the way, Jackson. This went on for the entire ride that she was on the train, which was like a 5-hour ride. It's insane.
I really don't... I think it's gotten worse, but I think this practice has always been in place ever since there was something to distract your kids with. Like, I remember my mom used to just drop me in front of the TV and, you know, I just watch TV for an hour. And while the content is obviously better on TV, I would say, like, the content that I consumed back then was, like, SpongeBob and shit like that, so better. But still, like, the act is still the same. You're putting your kid in front of something so that something entertains them for... you know, a certain amount of time so that you
I agree.
Can,
it's
as a parent,
just
have
the
a break.
Issue is that
but it's,
all of
it's
these companies have, yeah, they've gotten so much more efficient at addicting children and ruining their goddamn brains.
The other problem is, Jackson, that the iPad is always there and always available. So if you're a parent
so
and you're
TVs.
Sitting around... Well, no. If you're a parent and you're sitting at home and you're in the 90s, you're not going to want to, like, see most of the time. You're not going to have to deal with your kid for 24 hours straight every single day. So if you're just at home doing nothing, you'll go, here, watch TV. I've got fucking shit to do or phone calls to make or whatever. But if you go out somewhere and bring your kid, you're responsible for your kid. But oftentimes now parents are just, hey, you just stick with me and watch your fucking iPad. You know?
Yeah, it's a digital babysitter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they don't want to take the responsibility of if they're out with their kid throughout the day, keeping them quiet or entertained or engaged or whatever.
It is just a portable television.
Exactly.
That's the only real difference.
It wasn't, that was not
it's,
an option.
I wouldn't even
for.
Consider it a portable television. It's just a free babysitter. Like, I don't even think it's entertainment for the kids. They literally just sit there fucking mindlessly like these little brain dead drones listening to these goddamn awful sound effects on repeat. And kids, like, they
I
don't
know,
even
know
what
I
they're
know.
Looking at.
I know what you're saying, but it is entertainment for kids.
I'll tell you guys.
Any
I'll
kind
tell
of
you guys.
Entertainment for them.
I can tell you guys a really heartwarming story about a good parent I just remembered. If we want to bring levity to this show,
did you remember your parents or something? Like,
aww.
Surely you have.
Let's talk about how great my parents. No. I was on a flight many years ago. I don't remember, but definitely well into the era of smartphones and kids having iPads and all that shit. And I sat next to this mother, and she had her daughter who was, you know, aged to be playing with, like, dolls and imagination and precocious and all that shit. And for the entire flight, like, she had an iPad and a laptop and all this shit, but for the entire flight, they brought dolls and a little playhouse. And for the entire flight, she just sat there going like, oh, okay, my name's Jeannie and I want to go to the salon. And the daughter would be like, hi, Jeannie, welcome. I'm going to wash your hair. And she'd go, well, I want to go over here and make this with this. Can you help me? And the daughter was like, yeah, let's do that. That'd be a lot of fun. And at one point, she like kind of started dancing the doll on my leg. And the mom was like, well, don't bother him. He's not part of the game. And I was like, no, it's fine. I don't mind. But it was,
that was a weird thing to say. I think that's a weird thing to say, honestly.
Well, okay, but that's not fair. That's like a lose-lose, like, as a man. Like, what the fuck do you say to that? Like, no, play on my lap, little girl.
I don't think
you
did anything wrong. What did I do wrong?
What the fuck are you talking about?
You're making it weird, Jackson. I think that's a totally fine response.
I had headphones on, and she started tapping my leg, and I, like, pulled them off for a second. And her mom went, no, don't bother him. He's not playing. And I said, oh, no, it's fine. That's okay. Like, I wasn't upset. I was telling her, no,
depends on the tone
you're not bothering
in your voice, I guess. If you go, it's fine, that's fine. If you go, it's okay.
No, if I have to recreate the exact tone of my voice, I went, no, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I don't see at all what I did wrong there, but okay.
Yeah, I didn't say you did anything wrong.
We're fucking
joking.
Around with you.
Oh, okay. But yeah, it was just heartwarming and wholesome to see a parent actually invested in entertaining their child and giving a shit and not just, you know, slapping them with an iPad and then fucking around on their own.
Yeah, nice. See, the problem is...
It's good for imagination. It's good for everything.
It's so much better for everything,
but here's the issue. Then the mother cannot spend time on Instagram herself. She actually has to engage with the kid. Yeah.
It's not easy being a parent in the modern age. You need to balance your TikTok dances with making sure your kid has access to an iPad. Like, it's not easy.
You have to make sure you went through all of your reels and all of your scrolls for the day. If you miss that day on Instagram or TikTok, you're fucked. Your life
you
is
might not
done.
Get a, you might miss a brand deal. You might not be eating that week.
Oh, no.
There are so many creators in this era. Everyone is a creator. Everyone is a content producer.
Everyone is Jackson. Yep. Yeah,
dude. Let's go back to the cynical fucking dark pit that we dig. I think that has also shown me how uncreative most people are. The content that people pump out, man. There's just more unwatchable shit now than ever. It's impressive.
I don't think any of that's changed. I disagree with. I don't think any of that has ever changed. It's just now you're older and you see more of it.
I think it's changed.
I think it's the entire landscape of how we get the bar of entry is lower, but I think it's a good thing though.
Well, no, it's the landscape of how we get entertainment has changed entirely. Let's go back to just the 80s and 90s. The entertainment that you would get is what was approved to be at a mainstream platform like television or radio or whatever.
I thought you were comparing it to other content online.
Oh, no. I mean in general. Oh.
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously, for sure, then.
But I still think that's good. I know there's now so much garbage out there. I know that, like, 99 out of 100 Zoomers just make TikTok channels. But there's, like, one out of them who makes a TikTok channel, and he has actually good music to share. Because now it's easy to just download FL Studio and have, like, a, whatever, $20 keyboard. And make stuff. I think that's a nice thing. The downside is, of course, we have to deal with all the other bullshit.
The gateway opened wider just lets more talented people in, Andrew.
And it is only a net positive. Yes, you are more likely to discover not only talented people you wouldn't have found before, but also things more to your taste. If you find music and you go, oh, I want more bands more like this, it's not whatever you hear on the radio and you have to pick and choose. It's I can literally do some searching and find like dozens, maybe hundreds of bands that sound exactly like that I never would have found before. But the other problem is it's promoted all the same. You know, I'll hop on YouTube and I'll see incredible documentaries like Kevin Perger just put out an amazing documentary on the Disney Channel. And it currently has 3.5 million views. And it is really well researched and really well put together and a fucking enthralling ride from start to finish. It's got 3.5 million views. At the same time, a lazy, shitty, terrible fucking meme thrown together in 10 minutes will climb to 6-7 million views in the same span of time. And it'll get promoted by YouTube all the same and thrown in my face every day.
I don't even think that's not really a YouTube thing, though. That's different people looking for different things. Yeah, like, you have to keep in mind a lot of those people that are watching the 10-second meme are kids. They're not going to sit there and watch it.
Oh, I'm aware.
Really
it's
long.
The
But that's 10 million children on trains on their iPads watching YouTube kids and
meaningless views.
But the problem is that when I hop on YouTube and I go, okay, algorithm, here's my subscriptions and here's what I search, show me good videos, it will promote that video to me every single day. And then when it's one, it's not a big deal. But when my feed, the first like six or seven videos are unwatchable garbage, that's when it gets annoying.
I get where you're coming from, and I agree, like, the algorithm doesn't throw up, like, good stuff a lot of the time, but I don't really quantify things by the amount of views they have, or I don't really assign value to a thing based on the amount of views it has, I guess, like, if
It's only said to me if... Yeah, I agree. I also don't care about view counts, but I only get sad if I think somebody put a lot of effort into something and it is beautiful, but they cannot make a living with it. If you only get like 10,000 views, but you do make money with it because you have like a few whale patrons or something, that's a good thing. You don't have to have millions of views. If you can make your way through life, support yourself and your family, and you do something that you love and it's great art.
And you create beautiful things.
Yeah, you don't have to get as many views as, whatever, Logan Paul or whoever's famous nowadays. That's okay by me. I think AI is also going to, like, create a dichotomy between people who just lazily copy ChatGPT prompts and write entire books like that, and people who use it in interesting ways to, like, I don't know, I'm sure Pixar at some point is going to take a lot of people with a lot of talent and use AI to make an entirely AI-generated movie. Or video game.
I mean, I also agree with that point. You know, view counts aren't the defining important factor to these creations, but there is an angle to it that is important. For example, business. You know, you're far more likely to get funds for bigger projects if your video is seen. You're far more likely to have more support, et cetera, et cetera. It's definitely not the only thing, but it's something to consider, especially in fucking the modern era with social media, where everything for a lot of people is revolved around view counts, where, you know, the entire model is around viewership.
So Charlie kind of touched on this, though. I don't think this is a solvable issue, because I think even if the Kevin Perdurer documentary, which is I watched it as well, it was fantastic, even if that was heavily promoted by YouTube, like, constantly, it's so niche and targeted,
you probably still
and long
would end up in the same view category.
I don't think it would have exceeded all the other popular viral videos, for example. So I don't think it's a solvable issue when it's on an audience level.
No, I agree. It's just kind of how things are. I'm not saying like, oh, well, here's what we need to do to fix it. And there's really no way to fix or change that at all. It's just still at the same time annoying, you know? Yeah. It is what it is, but I can still complain. There you go.
And that's the thing. We can always still complain. Am I right, boys?
Yeah, let's complain. New topic to complain
about.
Here we go.
Wasn't this... this came from the menu, which was meant to be a good thing.
Oh, I don't think it came from the menu. I just kind of tacked that onto an already negative thing. That movie slaps.
Yeah, I haven't
complaining
watched it.
Complaining can be entertaining.
Complaining is all we fucking do, though.
Charlie, do you want to take a bit to complain about Plane?
Well, do you want to know something to really complain about besides the movie being stinky? You'll probably see it in the Patreon chat. People love that movie, Andrew.
What?
I got grilled for not liking it. Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding? That was the most boring goddamn movie ever made.
Look at the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. Wait. It's like a 92%.
What?
Yep.
Which
no,
movie?
No, fuck.
It's called Plane. It's a fucking stinker.
Holy shit. No way.
Yep. What's it about?
It's about a fucking plane going down, and they land on this like remote island that's controlled by terrorists, and then they have to like get off. It's so fucking stupid. It'd be really entertaining, like, if there was like action and stuff that happens, but there's like not even that. It's not even really a fucking action movie. It's a nothing movie.
76% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 94% audience score with over 1,000 reviews. What the fuck is wrong with you people? That movie's horrendous.
That's what I fucking said.
Oh my god. It is the most nothing, plain, flat, uninteresting action movie of the last year. Holy shit.
It's hardly even a goddamn action movie because they cut away from the action.
I know.
Even the poster is so tedious. It's all
terrible.
Drab and brown.
Oh god, it has really, really stupid plot decisions from top to bottom. The entire first third of the movie is watching Gerard Butler fly a plane in real time. It's oh god, it's so bad.
Did this just come out?
We watched it in theaters.
So why is it called plane if the doesn't even sound like the plane portion pip is important?
It is. So like he God, I can't believe I'm going to fucking explain the plot again. Gerard Butler's a pilot. He used to be like a hotshot pilot who would fly glamorous routes like over Paris, but then a rowdy customer said mean things and he said, "Hey man, what's going on?" The customer pushed him, so Gerard Butler punches him and then fucking chokes him out. So he got...
In the plane?
In the plane. And
as a pilot? So
yeah.
Yeah.
So as a commercial pilot?
Yes. Yeah.
I think the air marshal would arrest the pilot. You can't just, like, punch someone.
Well, wait, who's gonna land the plane then?
The pilot does a lot of stupid things in this movie, Kaya, don't you worry.
Kaya, I haven't even begun to touch on the shit he does as a fucking pilot.
Yeah.
But, so, anyway, after getting, like, shit canned to do shittier routes, he's now, like, I think it's Singapore, so now he does, like, only Singapore routes, which are, like, not the big routes anymore. But one day, he's, flying his plane home, and he's like, "Wow, there's a really intense weather storm up ahead. You know, why don't we take this route and go around it?" But then the head honcho corporate suit, he's like, "Nope, you're going right through it." And he's like, "Well, I mean, if you say so." So they go, while they're going right through it, they get hit with a lightning strike in the plane, and they lose all power. It starts to get all cattywampus. And I shit you not, while this is happening and while they're like losing control, Gerard Butler gives it to his co-pilot. He's like, "Here, take the wheel. I'm going to go calm everyone down." So as this thing is fucking crashing, he's like, "Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, we're still in the air, and things will, it's going to start looking up soon." And then it gets worse, obviously. He hits his head on an overhead compartment, and then there's nothing they can do to stop the plane from crashing, but there's also a criminal on the flight. So the criminal and his handler are, you know, getting thrown around. The handler dies because he hits the ceiling.
Oh, but why does he hit the ceiling, Charlie?
Oh, because he was sending a text message to someone he loved, and he dropped his phone while this thing was crashing, so he unbuckles his seatbelt to go chase his phone around the plane. And
why does the stewardess get killed, Charlie?
Because she unbuckles her seatbelt to try and get the handler back in his seat to put his seatbelt on.
While they're crashing.
And they both hit the top of the plane, the little roof, and they die instantly. Would that kill you?
By the way, I would like to point out that a lightning strike would not take down an airplane. Yeah. They're designed to get struck by lightning.
They're designed, yeah.
Yep. Oh yeah, there's a lot of stupid shit in this movie. It's so preposterously dumb.
Shittier version of Flight with
It is a much shittier version. It's a shittier version of an older movie called Flight of the Phoenix, where what happens there is they're flying over the desert, they lose control, it crashes, and then they crash right next to like a camp of bad guys who starts to like raid them. That's exactly what happens here, but without any of like the suspense or interest that Flight of the Phoenix had. So they crash on this place. It's a controlled fall. They land in the.
So I remember that Gerard movie. Butler. It had Hugh Laurie.
Yeah, it has Hugh Laurie.
Yeah. So Gerard Butler is a strength leading man, right? He is when he is the middle man
action
on a screen. What, Jackson?
Just action man. He's an action.
Yeah, he's an action man. So when he is leading a movie, he's like got muscles, and he's like, "I'm gonna kick this guy's ass," and "Oh, I'm doing it for my family." Like he's like a Rock type, you know, that kind of guy. Not like a dramatic actor, not a suave romance guy, whatever, but a very, very big hulking man. Gerard Butler has one fight scene in the movie against one guy and spends the rest of the entire movie just like calmly talking to people and trying to fix the plane. All the action is done by his supporting guy, the prisoner who's being extradited, and like the terrorists and a cell of PMCs that they hire to rescue the plane passengers.
They also threw in a really lame Con Air ripoff?
Kinda?
Not really, yeah. But kinda.
But Gerard Butler spends 90% of the movie just going, "All right, everyone, calm down. I'm here to get you out. Don't worry, stick with me. But he does nothing interesting or exciting. It's all the other characters. And speaking of the other characters, the passengers on the plane exist just to be taken hostage. They have no development, no backstory, yeah. Nothing. They even go through the trouble of giving them all like names and having like little character moments, but all it ends up with is they're just like sheep. They just get herded around the entire movie with no free will or opinions whatsoever.
God, Gerard Butler's one fight scene in this movie is so fucking stupid, though. So after they crash, they're like, all right, we got to find out where we are because we don't know where we crashed. So I'm going to go into the forest and look for a telephone. So he's like, and the prisoner's coming with me. He volunteered. So he takes the prisoner to get him away from the rest of the people. Eventually, the two of them split up, and Gerard Butler finds like this old, dilapidated building and this fucking phone that I swear to God looks like the first phone ever made. It's covered in like overgrowth, moss, and everything. So he looks to the left of it, and there's these two wires, and he's like, "Oh, I see." So he takes the two wires and touches them together, and then he gets a dial tone somehow. So he calls the United States Embassy, and he's like, "Stop prank calling us. We've been getting prank calls about this fucking pilot all day." So they hang up on him. He's like, "God, I'm gonna have to do it again." So he takes the wires, he puts the wires together, and he calls his daughter. And while he's on the phone with his daughter, one of the terrorists that own the island come in, starts beating his ass. And in the struggle, Gerard Butler, for some reason, grabs the phone off the wall, rips it down, and throws it on the floor. He doesn't even use it as a weapon.
Yep.
It's so good.
Oh, man. One of my favorite things to show that they had no understanding of character development or audience emotion whatsoever. So there's a handful of passengers, and they all have, like, sort of different personalities. They're really poorly written, but they're kind of there. So there's two specific passengers. One of them is a dick. He's, like, a German. And he's like really snarky and rude to people. Like when he's on the flight, he's very obsessively wiping his scene down with a clean wipe. And when the waitress comes over, she goes, "Can I offer you a drink?" And he goes, "Yes, but I want exactly 3 ice cubes, please. Exactly 3. And she goes, "Are you sure I can give you more? I can give you like 5. And he goes, "No, I want exactly 3. Give me what I want." And he's like very like condescending and rude and just not a nice guy. Meanwhile, there's another passenger on the plane. He's just a dude. He's just a regular guy. And he's got a phone, obviously. And when they first crash and are waiting at the camp that they set up, he films everything. And they go, "Why are you fucking filming stuff? Like, what's the point of Instagram?" And he goes, "No, I'm not doing this. I'm filming it to document it. You know, planes go down and shit like this happens. And if no one sees the recording, it never happened. And they can't explain it. So I'm like documenting us and filming us and making sure that like our story gets out there," which is a fairly smart thing to do. So later in the movie, at the very end, when all the passengers are being rescued, guess who gets shot? The really nice guy. They're trying to get on the plane and they're escaping, and the really nice guy that we kind of like takes a stray bullet, and
but
he's
also
like bleeding out.
It doesn't matter though. He gets shot
matter.
And they forget that it happens. So yeah. That's the only time you see him. He gets shot and you don't even know who gets shot because they're both bald. They're both bald and they're both like from a distance going up this goddamn fucking ladder back to the plane. Andrew has left out so many crucial details and is focusing on the worst parts because everything is so stupid. Like
wait. But Andrew, can we just briefly go back to that? Andrew, yeah. You said that like he's the only character you like.
When you're writing for audience emotions, you need to understand how they connect to characters. The bad characters should rightfully get punished. That's a sense of satisfaction. Whereas if bad things happen to good characters, it's a sense of despair. For example, a well-written show Breaking Bad.
That's what they want you to feel, right? That's what they're trying to make you feel.
God damn it.
Andrew's giving us too much credit.
That's the triumphant moment where they're trying to escape.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like
that
guy gets shot and you don't feel like, oh, fuck, that sucks. Like, he did not deserve it. And it's not a
I didn't even know who it was.
They're
both bald, and he gets shot from a distance, and it sounds like it hits the metal next to him, but then he crumples over, and I didn't know who the fuck it was. And they literally don't even look at him again. I didn't know it was the nice guy until Andrew said it was.
By the way, what you're calling...
so stupid.
Was this like a sad ending?
No, it was a good ending. God damn
it. It's a super happy ending. That's why it's weird that the happy nice guy gets shot for no reason.
Oh.
That's okay.
Yeah. So what I was trying to explain, is if you have bad things happen to good people in movies, it gives the audience a sense of despair. If you have a good written show like Breaking Bad, they do that to make you feel like a character's an asshole. Walter White poisons a child who is innocent, and then you go, Walter White's a bad person. He deserves bad shit to happen. But in this movie, one of the characters we're supposed to like, who's like really friendly, just gets shot, and you go, well, what the fuck? Why'd he get shot? That just sucks. That's not good. When it's during the triumphant, like, oh, they're gonna make it ending. It's so stupid.
But then the triumphant ending has consequences, right?
No, someone doesn't, because they don't even show the guy who's a dick never gets shot or anything. He just walks off the plane and goes home.
And the guy who does get shot, they don't even show. The only reason that I think Andrew even recognized who it was is because there's a panning shot and you can see him going, oof. Ouch! While he's in the plane and they're taking off again.
He's like bleeding out in the plane, but he's the nice guy, and yet the guy who's a dick has nothing bad happen to him whatsoever. Also, there's a guy who gets on the plane in the very beginning, and he's like this like college frat boy, and one of the passengers goes, oh, how'd you be able to afford this flight? And he goes, oh, I got frequent flyer miles, bro. And he's like supposed to be this like, you know, carefree like dude bro, and his only thing in the movie that he does is they rescue them from a prison. And Gerard Butler puts him on a bus and he goes, can you drive this thing? And he goes, yeah, man, I can drive anything. That's it. That's all he does in the whole movie. It means nothing.
Are the women there to be hot? Is it like a hot?
No, not even.
You don't see any of these fucking passengers, Jackson. You don't see any of them ever. It's so stupid. It's everything about that movie is actually terrible, even from an action movie perspective, because they don't show the action. So every piece of action, like you'll see the prisoner like shoot at somebody and then they fall from a distance. You don't see anything. There's one scene of action where one of the PMC, Jesus Christ. The PMCs come to try and rescue these people, and there's four of them. It's like the goddamn Navy SEALs, and it's against an entire island, and yet somehow all four of them kill the entire island's terrorists. But regardless, one of them has a 50 cal. So he starts shooting some of the terrorists through their cars, and you see them like fly back and hit the car. That's the only time they actually show any of the action. Even the final triumphant moment where Gerard Butler's like, all right, we're getting back on the plane, and I'm flying us the fuck out of here. So as he's taking off, the main leader's name's Datu. He's got an RPG out on the back of a truck on the runway. And Gerard Butler and him are having a stare off as he's like flying the plane towards him. And then as he's taken off, the implication is that he hits him with the plane, but they don't show you. Instead, they cop out and just show the plane hitting a car. So it's just, they don't even bother showing the action. It's just a terrible fucking action movie too.
Now let's whip around and blame the audience, because Charlie, when we saw this movie, quite a few fun things happened. Number one, a woman in the front row was FaceTiming the first like fourth of the movie.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
With someone she was on the phone with, just literally just showing her the movie over the phone on FaceTime. I was shocked that she put it away. Number two, there was a group of, I don't know, some people in like the back right corner of us towards the back, and they were just talking. Basically the whole movie they were just having conversation. They didn't care. But when that 50 caliber scene, what
I was asking, can you blame them?
Oh no. I can't. But here's the fun thing, when the action started for that scene with the 50 cal, that was when they were shooting them through cars, and every time a guy got hit with a 50 caliber bullet, he'd go flying, you know, like, which I guess more realistic. So, you know, normal guys in the movie, if they get shot or whatever, it cuts away or it looks like shit. But the guys who got shot with a 50 cal, they'd go flying and the car would explode, and it'd be kind of satisfying. Every time that happened, that group would go, oh, hey, throughout the theater. So you could tell that the people watching this movie were not here to watch a movie. They were just here to fuck around and just like waste time. And not that's get invested. Fair. They just wanted to go, let's just go see a movie, haha. So I think that's why people are rating it highly. They didn't actually watch the movie. They went with a gang of friends to fuck around.
That has to be the case, because it is fucking terrible in every possible department.
Yeah.
No, because do you really imagine that group of people went home and logged into Rotten Tomatoes with their accounts? And gave fucking 5 stars.
That's so true, actually. Good point.
I don't know.
Oh, man. How many people do you know who even have a Rotten Tomatoes account? At this point, it all has to be AstroTurfed movie studio bot farms.
I love that also, image though, like after celebrating the 50 cal, it's like, all right guys, now log into your Rotten Tomatoes account, let's show good manners here and give them a high review for the entertainment we experienced.
Also, the movie at a certain point loses any and all stakes. As soon as the PMC shows up, there are no stakes for the entire rest of the movie. PMC shows up and they rescue everybody, no sweat, they don't get shot, nothing happens, they take out the pirates without even trying, and then they all run away, and then like the pirates get reinforcements, and so the PMC set up for like a defense while everyone gets on the plane to fly back home. And the guy with the 50 cal's there and he's like blasting dudes. And you think, okay, that 50 cal guy is overpowered. He is like their crux, their fucking ace in the hole. Something's got to happen. He's got to run out of ammo. He's going to get shot, something. Nothing. They just sit there and willy-nilly pick off pirates until everyone takes their sweet time and flies away. And that's the last half of the movie. Also, Gerard Butler fixes the landing gear on the plane because he's like, without landing gear, we're fucked. We can't fly home, which is funny because in the final scene of the movie, they fly home without landing gear. But he fixes it. Like, he's like on the runway while they're being shot at. He's trying to fix it. And he gets shot in the shoulder. And at the end of the movie, they land Yeah?
They say you can't land without landing gear?
Yeah, that's one of the points they bring up. Has he not heard about the Hudson River landing? No, I guess not, because while they're being shot at, he desperately stands outside of the plane trying to fix the landing gear while everyone else is on board and ready to go. But he gets shot in the shoulder, and they take off and they land the plane in a safe airport, and everyone else gets off the plane. They unfurl the like little jump slide and they slide down, and like the medical people are escorted off. But Gerard Butler, who is currently bleeding out from a bullet in the shoulder, tells everyone,
and his leg, he got shot. When he was fixing
right.
the brakes, he took a shot to the leg and then continued running to the plane. And then when he was having his stare down with Datu, he gets shot in the shoulder.
Yep. He gets shot. He gets shot multiple times. He's bleeding out. He has been rescuing and running around the island all day. He just tells everyone, you guys go on ahead, I need a minute, you all go, it's fine, tend to your families, go get attention, I'll be there. And you think he's gonna die on the plane, he's gonna have like this heroic like, well, I did it, time to finally die. But nope, he just kind of awkwardly sits there for 3 minutes and then gets up and walks off the plane for no reason.
It's such a stinker. It'd just be like a forgettably bad movie, because it's not like entertainingly shit, it's just really just kind of super shit. I wouldn't care as much if people just didn't for some reason like it. That just makes me upset. The fact that anyone liked it really is just offensive to me.
Yep. I thought after walking out of that theater we were never going to talk about this movie again.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought too.
That's what I thought.
I mean,
after
the scores are like, the score's like 7 out of 10 average. I mean, that's somewhat high.
Not on
but it's
Rotten
like,
Tomatoes.
Yeah, it's 94
it's actually,
on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 94% audience score, by the way, where usually with a bad movie, it's the other way around. You know, the critics are all like, oh, this is the best movie ever. And then the audience goes, no, 0%. But this time, it's the other way around. It's interesting.
It was just so bad.
So there's just actually nothing to like.
No, it was boring bad.
Yeah,
very boring bad.
It's very bad as an action movie. It's very bad as a suspenseful movie. It's just very bad as an experience. Like Andrew said, I thought this was going to be something that we talk about on the way home and then never talk about again. Because it's not like Moonfall where there's like so much to like about it being bad. This is legitimately nothing to have any amount of fun. It's just terrible.
I'll tell you what it is. Yeah. Go ahead.
93% of the people that like this are definitely like people in their 40s or 50s, because this is the type of movie that my parents would love to watch, I think.
I have a hard time believing that, though.
The only scene in the movie that was any enjoyable was they're sneaking into the pirate camp to get the passengers out of a prison, and one of the guys, the prisoner dude who's being extradited, finds a sledgehammer. And he just starts, like, caving pirate skulls in left and right while they're, like, trying to sneak in.
Which would be cool if they fucking showed it, but they show one hit, and he gets hit with a sledgehammer and his nose bleeds, and he just dies.
The other one, they don't show it.
Yeah, the other one, he hits him off camera, and then he's presumably on the floor, so then they pan the camera up to the sledgehammer coming down and a noise going...
Yep.
They don't show anything.
and it could have been this nice moment of character writing and levity, because there's this like dark, serious, horrible tone and all this shit. But the pilot and the extradited prisoner are bonding. And the whole point is the prisoner's not afraid to like kill people and get his hands dirty and shoot. And the pilot's like, yeah, I mean, I used to be in the fucking army and I could do this. Like, I'll follow you. But it shows this contrast of the prisoner's like a brutal motherfucker. Like, he's not afraid to explode a man's skull with a sledgehammer. But no, it just kind of happens and they just move on. Nothing really comes from that. It's just a goofy little scene.
I get that, like, we're critiquing the writing and stuff. We're really, like, nitpicking the quality of the movie or whatever. But, like, mm-hmm. this seems like the kind of movie that would have the kind of dialogue that it has, or the kind of writing that it has. It seems like shit that they just shat out, basically.
It doesn't really have writing. Like, they don't even really speak to each other. Gerard Butler's like, yeah. Or not Gerard Butler. The prisoner's like, okay, you're gonna take the guy on the left, I'll take the guy on the right. Gerard Butler's like, oh god, okay. And then he does it, he's like, oh god, okay. So then they go and like rescue the prisoner. Like, they don't really talk. It's just Gerard Butler going,
yeah. It's funny. They should have swapped the leading roles. Gerard Butler should have been the prisoner, because the prisoner is the badass of the movie. Yeah. He kills people, he gets his hands dirty, he gets in there, he's like fucking shooting left and right, he's having a great time. But Gerard Butler is like a fucking pushy half the movie. Like,
well, he's a
bitch.
Fucking airline pilot.
But he says earlier in the movie he flew for the Air Force. So
yeah,
in
that
army.
Doesn't mean he's the Air Force pilots aren't on the ground like punching
it
people and shit.
Even still, it doesn't fucking matter.
But he's in the plane punching people.
True.
Okay, I've been taking notes. So matters. Here, according to what I've heard so far, here are better movies that I would recommend: 50 Caliber Gun, Rambo 4. You have to make sure that you seek out the uncensored version. It's a lot of fun.
It's
and
a good
also
movie.
Just. The good guy clearing out an entire island full of bad guys. That's also what the movie is good for. As far as plane crashes go, Flight with Denzel Washington and Flight of the Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Both are good for plane crash movies. And Con Air, if you want to watch prisoners on a plane. And it's goofily entertaining.
If you want to watch the reverse, Die Hard 2. About a plane being fucking fucked with and an airport and all that shit and a guy having to stop a bunch of terrorists by sneaking through it. Die Hard 2. It's a great movie for that.
Or if you want a movie just based around planes in general, I recommend Airplane. Good comedy.
Oh, yeah. If you want to laugh about airplanes, yeah. There's a lot of better movies is what we're saying.
What? You've never heard of Airplane? What?
Yeah, Kai, we've talked about Airplane. No, Leslie Nielsen.
What?
Leslie Nielsen, like, comedy from the 70s.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
Yeah.
It's like one of the most prolific comedies of all time.
Yeah. You know Airplane.
I may have to refresh my memory, but yeah. I haven't watched this since
go
I was
watch it.
A teenager.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's held up perfectly. It's still hilarious. Nice. Same with the sequel. It's also good. Airplane 2.
See, that was a positive note.
We made it a positive note at the end, but it was like 20 minutes of ranting about a shitty movie first.
Well, you gotta have your vegetables before you get the dessert. That's what I've always said.
Honestly, I'd rather watch Snakes on a Plane than this. Like, at least that movie's
fun.
Goofy bad, but like this was just so boring.
It was just so offensive. The fact that anyone likes it actually makes me super, super upset. I'm not gonna lie.
I agree. Completely agree.
I just don't know what you guys were expecting from a movie called Plane Star.
No, we tried it to be bad. We went because it was supposed to be bad.
Yeah, Charlie and I have seen many bad movies that have great entertainment. And in fact, Gerard Butler was in Gods of Egypt, which
is
one of our favorite bad movies ever made. So we went in with the implication, okay, it's a bad action movie with Gerard Butler. It's got to be entertaining. But this wasn't even entertaining. It was just boring. It was just nothing. Nothing happened.
Like, when you see Gerard Butler in a January movie, like, you go in there expecting it to be fun bad. Like, he was recently in Geostorm, Gods of Egypt. Like, he makes absolute banging stinkers. But this one, this was just a stinky stinker. Like, there's nothing to like about it.
Has he ever been in a good movie?
300.
Come on, that's like 25 years ago. And I don't even think that's a...
It is
like
a good
movie.
I don't know how you're going to try and say that.
He's the narrator of the Curse of the Black Freighter segments in Watchmen. And those are fucking excellent. There you go.
He's a narrator that's like...
He's still in it. He's still voice acting.
Aren't those the cartoon intermissions?
Yes. And they're really good.
He's not an actor in that. That's just a... What?
Voice actors are actors.
Hey, well, there's actors,
Okay, technically you win, I guess, but...
Yeah, gotcha. Fuck you.
The movie wasn't like, he's not the leading role or anything, you know? He's not the main thrust of the movie.
Okay, but that's like if I said Keanu Reeves is a great actor because he played part in that one Silk Road Bitcoin documentary as a narrator. Like, that's not why I watch Keanu Reeves. I watch him because he's John Wick.
I get that, but the Curse of the Black Freighter stuff is more acting. He's playing a character when he narrates, so...
Did he still have his, like, Irish accent?
He does have an accent, I think. I don't remember. I think
It's Scottish, I think, actually, not Irish.
Yeah. They're really good, though. They're arguably the best part of that movie.
Fair enough.
Oh, well. Yeah.
He's in How to Train Your Dragon.
Is he?
That other voice acting stuff. Yeah, I don't remember which role.
He's good in movies where he doesn't appear, and he only talks.
But he's famous for appearing. Like, he's famous because of his body and shit.
He was famous because of 24.
Did you guys like Law Abiding Citizen? He was in that.
I know the movie. I don't remember it, though.
That's the one where, like, I think it's him. It's either him or Jamie Foxx, whoever plays the criminal, but they're stuck in jail, and somehow they keep committing these assassinations from in jail with all these, like, wraparound plots, and they can't prove that he did it.
Well, that sounds cool.
It's a cool movie. It's interesting.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Before we wrap, is anyone keeping up with The Last of Us? It's so nice to have a TV show... video game adaptation that actually takes the source material seriously, and it's so fucking good.
Yeah, I heard it's
good.
Decent.
It's so good.
I haven't seen
what
the second episode yet.
To hear.
Yeah, the first episode is amazing.
It is extremely surprising how faithful they have been and how well it turned out. It's a nice feel. It's like vindication, because this is what we've been saying all along. These video game adaptations need to stop shitting on the source material and start treating it with respect, because that's what made it popular in the first place. That's why it's getting a fucking adaptation.
Is it just one-to-one with the game?
I'd say they've taken some liberties, obviously,
Okay. Because
some things just don't work on screen. But by and large, everything is like really faithful. Like, direct lines are taken from the game, direct
settings,
direct character directions.
There are no QuickTime events in the show?
Not yet.
Press select on your remote to keep watching.
It's also the good kind of adaptation where they've expanded on the source material as well and added additional context and additional scenes to things that we experienced in the game. Like in the second episode, I'm not going to spoil anything, but the entire first like 20 minutes is something entirely new that really grounds the series and really expands on it in an interesting way. I don't know. I don't really want to get into spoilers, though, in case anyone hasn't watched it.
Yeah, don't spoil it.
So with that, then, would you say if someone's played the games and their attitude is, oh, I've played the games, I know what happens, I don't really care, is there enough to the show
to want to watch it? The show is for you.
They actually added a lot, especially in the beginning, to like flesh out Sarah's character. It's all like really good additions that they've put in
it
so far.
It really is. Really smart additions to it. It's not cheap or lazy. Like, there's actual substantial quality to this, and it's I want to put it down to the filmmaker in this case, Craig. I think his name is Craig Mazin. He's the guy that did the Chernobyl miniseries, which was also fantastic. The HBO Chernobyl one. What did you not like it, Kaya?
No, I liked it. I hate it for the sole reason that it's reinvigorated the superstition against nuclear energy.
I get
that's
that, but it was a good
issue with it.
It was a good series, yeah. So he's clearly talented at adapting things, and this show is just fantastic. I wanted to end this episode on a positive note. So, Charlie, you've seen it, though.
Not the second episode. The first episode's amazing, though.
And yeah, but you agree. Okay. I just wanted to hear some thoughts.
Yeah, Andrew and I played The Last of Us together the first time
around.
The intro was so fucking iconic. Still probably one of the best in all of gaming. You should absolutely watch the show, Andrew. I actually think they do it just as well.
I probably will. Honestly, I enjoyed the first Last of Us so much. I remember that was a game that I showed my dad And he was like, holy shit, it's like a movie. So I would just play it and he would just watch it like a movie and he loved it too. It's a really great story. So I might watch this.
Not to split the room, but I enjoyed both. Even the second one, because in the second one, there's that one area where you're playing as Abby. Was that her name?
Yeah.
And you're like Mike Tyson boxing zombies. That was a lot of fun.
there's reasons to like the second one for different reasons.
It was like Mike Tyson's punch out. It was like awesome.
With their big bulky arms the size of fucking boulders.
I'll split the room even further. This is the more controversial opinion, I think. I loved both games, and I loved the second game because of its narrative as well. I really enjoyed the narrative in the second game, and I know that is extremely
Yeah, it's divisive. Okay to just be off the mark sometimes, though. You're one for two.
Yeah, I thought it was great. The second one was okay, too. I might watch this show.
I think it attempted something for the second one, Jackson. I'll give you that. Like, I appreciate that they tried something really, really different, but...
I have maintained since this game's release that they had good ideas in the wrong order. I feel like if they had just done this same series of events, but in a different order, it would have been much, much, much better.
I could see that.
My only issue was it just dragged a little bit too long. I want to say the final third maybe dragged on a bit too long. And maybe in terms of pacing. Some of those decisions didn't quite nail it. But overall, I still enjoyed the narrative a lot.
Let's, if we want to, The Last of Us 2, get into a bit of spoilers, because Charlie, I'm curious. So spoiler warning, if you care about The Last of Us and Last of Us 2, even though we had like 6 episodes dissecting it. Charlie, would you say a better choice would be to start The Last of Us 2 as Abby and get all of her character growth and then... we get to the Joel execution and it shows kind of sympathy for Abby and it has more weight to that rather than just hitting you with that and then going, by the way, now play as Abby.
Yep. So I think the order of events could have been one of two ways. Starting with Abby, I think also would have been strong. The way I always envisioned it being best is you give like that, you know, that the rodeo, the, you know, like the gang's back together. So you have Joel, you have Ellie. You see their current life, you have the flashbacks of where things have been, you know, like going through like the old zoo, aquarium, all whatever. Like you build their relationship back up again to get everything accustomed. Then you can still have Abby come in and do that, but I still think it'd be better to build to it. So then you have the Abby parts. So then you get to see like, oh, here's what life is like outside of like this really cozy camp that they formed in this community.
Then just killing then, him off 10 minutes in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just so much, as opposed to just like a cold kill off like at the very beginning.
I was fine with that. Yeah. It was a strong opening, and then
what makes it a strong opening?
The flashback should have been at the start. The flashbacks throughout.
No,
the
there
story
wouldn't be flashbacks at that point. They wouldn't be like in my version. It wouldn't be flashbacks. You would just go through those things quickly, and then you get to the current day.
But the flashbacks throughout the story really serve to drive home. You know, Ellie's emotional turmoil or her motivation. So that's why I think they're placed throughout the game. It's kind of to remind the audience, hey, they had a strong relationship. Ellie loved this guy. And that's why
by the point those fucking flashbacks come in, you've probably already forgotten who the fuck Joel is. It happens in like the first 10 minutes. Like,
well, that's
no
why they're there, to remind you. To remind you why you should care about this.
And that's just dumb. Like, that death should have been far more, like, impactful. Like, it shouldn't have just come as, like, this cold open.
I mean, for new players, I can get why it wouldn't be impactful. But, like, I think it was very impactful.
The way that I think they could have done it that would have been interesting and kept the impact on this is if you bounce back and forth between the two in a better way. So let's say you start The Last of Us 2 and you're playing as Ellie and you have like I don't know, current day or flashback scene up to them and you play for a bit. And then it cuts to Abby after only a scene or two and you go, oh, it's a new character. We're seeing another perspective. This is like, how are they going to meet? What's going to happen? So you play through Abby's story a little bit. Then you go back to Ellie. Then you go back to Abby. And then... the shocking twist is you're playing as Abby and you find out she was the daughter of the doctor and you get to the scene where she kills Joel and now you're conflicted because you're like, well, I was playing as Ellie and I got more of The Last of Us, but I was also playing as Abby and I liked her sequences and it showed like a different perspective and I didn't know she was going to turn out to be a bad guy. Oh, fuck.
Now you hate now you hate someone that you liked initially.
I feel or like as opposed to hating someone
that's way more interesting.
Hating someone and then learning to over time.
But you don't. I don't think there was ever a moment where it's like, oh, okay, well, this feels good.
I feel like front loading the understanding of her character and her motivation kind of long term does a disservice to it, because the way it's laid out currently is she does the bad thing first, and then you spend an amount of time dissecting why she did that and understanding her motivation, and that's where it leaves off towards the ending, where, you know, the fight between them happens or whatever. So I think you need to have that understanding later in the game, personally.
I kind of get that. I get what you're saying effective. Yeah. But I think it would have more weight if you didn't. So I think the problem with that is that it takes away from the buildup of Joel and Ellie from the previous game. If you gave them a bit of both, so that bouncing back and forth with Ellie and Abby, so you're feeling the nostalgia, you're feeling the buildup from the previous game, you're like living in the conclusion, but you're also getting a new story, a new buildup, someone new to connect to. I think then when Joel gets killed, if you put that more towards like the climax of the game, the late middle, it would have a lot more impact, because then it throws everything on its head. Like, oh god, I built all that stuff up with Ellie and now it's gone, and oh shit, I grew to like Abby and now that's fucked and I don't know what to do. Fuck, what do I feel?
I think that's a much stronger stance, because like, even just looking in the chat, no one liked playing as Abby after they killed Joel. Nobody. Yeah. It was miserable. You spend 11 hours or so playing as Abby.
Kaya, you were playing a fucking arcade game when you played.
I get that emotion, but I enjoyed playing as Abby because I got to expand on her character. I enjoyed
But why? Okay, for you, maybe, I guess it's like, oh, okay, well, why did she do that? For most players, it's like, I don't really care why she did that. It's like, I didn't know anything about her. She just came in as this boogeyman and killed a character that I loved. I don't really want to play as her.
Yeah, but you're meant to engage with the narrative and dig deeper. That's the point of these narrative games. You're meant to understand the characters.
And you can understand them from the beginning and then even sympathize with her decision when she makes it.
But we're talking about an entirely different story then if the killing happens towards the end or the middle of the end.
Like towards the middle, if you just placed all the same beats in different orders, it'd be much more effective. I think the way Andrew described it sounds like a much more compelling narrative, where you're just talking about
a more linear order. Well, but
that's not linear at all. That bounces back and forth between times and characters. And then they come together in terms of events, though.
You're talking about putting the more of the like flashbacks towards the start, so you build up the relationship between Ellie and Joel.
Just get off the flashback thing. Just sideline that in your brain, even without this.
But you're saying more time with Ellie and Joel.
Yeah, and with Abby, so that way you can see what Abby's doing and get a whole new perspective on life outside of this comfy camp that Ellie and Joel are in now.
The way that I see it, Jackson, is you could build up a rapport with Abby, because you could have an air of mystery. We know what Ellie and Joel are all about. The first game was their entire story. So I don't think we need anything there. Yeah, but their part is going to be more of a continuation of that. You have their established things, their flashbacks, their relationship. You get another instance of what you get in the first game with Sarah, where you go, oh, now look, Ellie and Joel are building that kind of actual father-daughter relationship. Like, we got bits of that in the first game and we built up to it, but now we get to see them interacting in that light and what's going on and how they've changed and how they've grown. And then Abby is your new quote-unquote protagonist. Oh, what is she about? What's she doing? What's her camp like? Oh, she's still struggling and she's like fighting more of a war. It's not as personal. She's got like recruits and all these people and these organizations, and oh shit, what's this building up to? And then it culminates in the Joel
murder. I just don't
think
that's compelling, though. I don't think that stuff is compelling.
How is that more compelling than her just going and killing Joel instantly and then you spending 11 hours trying to empathize with her?
It's not compelling because we got no reason to care about her in any way at that beginning, but she's killed Joel at this point, so we have a compelling reason to hate her at least. But then they spend the rest of the game forcing you to like her.
So the biggest thing I had...
I don't think
the
they force you
two,
to like her.
Oh, they 100% do. Why is it that Ellie...
But that isn't forcing you to like her. It's giving
Jackson,
you the
why
opportunity
is it that
to
Ellie,
make a decision whether you like her or not.
Why is it that Ellie spends the entire game murdering dogs and pregnant women, but Abby spends the entire game hanging out with her friends and feeling sad that they're dead? Because they're forcing you to like Abby. It's writing. It's the writing that's doing it. That's the biggest problem I have with The Last of Us 2. I didn't care that much that they went super dark and super dour and were like, we're going to take everything from Ellie. That's fine. It's a depressing, dour universe. But they painted Ellie as this, like, fucking killing machine monster that we didn't spend an entire
game growing attached to. She was going on a mission of vengeance. That was the entire...
But she, in the entire first game, was this likable character.
I think it checks up because it's, like, it's easier to forgive someone that you hate... someone that you love than it is to like love. Grow to understand and empathize with someone that you hate from the beginning.
Exactly. Yeah. So the whole thing is in Ellie's cutscene, she's like stabbing a pregnant woman in the neck. She's killing a fucking dog. She's like killing people who have friends. And they're like, oh no, Jeff. Oh. But then when Abby shows up, her whole scenes are she plays fetch with a dog. She has like a love interest. She sees a corpse of someone we've never met before and goes, oh no, not Seb or whoever the fuck it was.
She still did immoral things though. She still did immoral things. It wasn't entirely like she was
right,
as
but
a
the way.
Saint.
That's right, but the way that they try to convince you to like her is cheap emotional manipulation, not genuine growth. All of her introductory scenes are, look how hard her life is, look how bad it is, instead of actually growing and feeling that for the character like we did with Joel and Ellie in the first game.
Well, the experiences of Ellie throughout the first game were also extremely harsh.
But we grew with that over time. Ellie didn't just show up and go, my life sucks, my parents are fucking dead. Joel, how hard it is to be me.
What if Ellie showed up at the very beginning and killed Sarah?
Yeah, exactly.
What?
What if Ellie just showed up and she killed Joel's daughter at the very beginning, and then the rest of the game was about trying to make you like Ellie?
I don't even know how to engage with that.
No.
I don't
even
know how to engage with that. That's not even a point.
How would you feel if the first game, the first introduction you saw of Ellie, was she was like stabbing a puppy in the neck and went, hi, I'm Ellie, you're supposed to transport me. Be kind of hard to like her.
It was hard to like her. That's the point of the second. That's the point of Abby. That's why they showed you.
It
her
didn't
killing
need
Joel
to be
first.
Though.
Of course,
like, it didn't have to.
Of course, they knew that it was going to be hard for you to like her. You're not meant to.
Well, then it's poorly done.
Then
why am I spending 11 hours playing through someone that I don't like? If the point isn't to grow and understand them.
The goal is to understand this flawed character both ways. You're meant to understand. You're meant to learn and grow and discover more about these two characters on their different paths and, you know, understand the intricacies of them. And over time, maybe you can make the choice which one you like or which one you don't like or which one you resonate most closely with.
Okay,
but here's what you don't have to like every single character.
No,
but
you
should like the character you're spending 11 hours playing.
Why?
What do you mean? Okay, Jackson, let's take a Star Wars game. You're only allowed to play as Rey. Like,
had depth, that's fine. If she had some
Abby doesn't have
to
depth
her.
For the first 11
she
fucking
does.
Hours. You go through
she
a
does.
Long series
Disagree.
Of depth after not having anything besides her killing Joel.
Yes, all characters start off with no depth. You expand on it. You grow.
But there,
over the
what
11
do you
hours.
Mean? You, except here, you start off with her killing a character you love. So it's a lot less than zero. It's negative. It's negative.
Yeah. You don't like her. Okay, you start off not liking her. I don't... What's your point?
And you just... You didn't have to, is the point. Like Andrew has, I think, laid out a really compelling argument. If you had just started with having Abby already start being fleshed out, seeing this entire new side of the Last of Us universe, getting her backstory, and then always wondering, how is she going to play into Joel and Ellie's story, since clearly these are the main characters, how are they going to intersect? And then as more details are revealed about her being like the daughter, like all that... And then the decision ultimately gets made to kill Joel. Well, at this point, you're like, oh, I spent so much time with her. I've started to like her. And I really do kind of understand where she's coming from. Like, you know, this decision is shocking. But, man, I can almost really empathize with it. Like, at that point, you've already grown with that character.
Don't you feel like doing that kind of robs the player of any choice? Like, it's kind of cheap in that way. Like,
you have a choice currently where she just instantly kills Joel.
Last of Us
you don't
is
have a choice, but like,
game,
you've given them a character that you really like, and then she does something, she kills the guy that you love, and you're playing as
it. And
that's
why
you
it's emotionally impactful.
You led her to that point.
That's the whole point.
What
that's why it's
mean?
Emotionally
what,
impactful.
What is this argument? It's not a choice driven game. Do you have a choice on whether Ellie spares or kills Abby at the end, Jackson?
No, it's not a choice-driven game, but, like, you still guide the character to that point.
And building the narrative for that. Jump through decisions that somebody else made for you, the writers. You don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think maybe choice is the wrong way of putting it, but like I would feel weird if I was playing a game and the narrative was like, all right, you should feel really good about this person, like this character is great, you love playing as her, and then I do something just fucking disgustingly evil to someone that I had previously liked. I'd feel like that was cheap, personally.
I have a counterexample.
I am so confused because that is literally already what the game
Jackson.
Is. That same thing happens and you're still playing as that person. The only difference is you have no idea why she's done it. You don't care. You just hate her because she started by doing
Jackson.
It.
Jackson.
Yeah,
nothing
is
changing.
Why she did it
is
kind of compelling.
Counterexample for that. Jackson, imagine, let's use your favorite thing in the world. Imagine you're watching Star Wars Episode 7.
Oh my god, I hate Star Wars, please.
Spoilers for Star Wars Episode 7. Do you think people would grow as attached to Kylo Ren if the very first thing you saw him do was killing Han Solo, and then the rest of the movie was, well, here's why I killed Han Solo. No,
it is kind of.
The whole point is they build up to him.
What?
They have this drama of
and
everyone going,
oh,
he's got good
death.
In him. He could
in
be a good Jedi.
Movie,
he's our son,
et cetera, et
cetera. And that's why it's a twist when at the end his father's like, son, it's time to come home. Stop fucking around. And he goes, I can't. I'm far gone. And he kills Han Solo. That's why it's a shocking moment that happens. But if it just happened in the beginning, you wouldn't care. You'd go, oh, well, the fucking he's a dick and he's a dick forever. Fuck that guy.
He was a dick. He was a dick throughout the entire first movie, though, and the second.
Okay, I'm going to try to, for balance sake, I'll try to take Jackson's side, which I will not be able to do effectively because I remember not much from this movie. But how much of the Abby hate do you guys think started from even before the game was released? Because I do remember that were all of those memes of like Neil Druckmann fucking Abby and everyone saying, why is there a muscular woman in this game?
So
I'm sure they probably had a role to
that,
play.
To be that fair to that, that probably did play into some degree,
yeah.
But you got to remember the script was leaked before the game came out.
Well, the entire script, everything.
Yeah, right. That's mostly why people were hating on it. I still remember before the game even came out, people were making Abby golf club memes, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. Sorry, Jackson.
All right, we opened a whole can of worms here. Wasn't this meant to be a nice ending? Like,
you were the one that had to like hop on the dumb side and say The Last of Us 2's narrative is like perfect or whatever.
I had to make my opinion known.
So, do you guys think, again, spoiler alerts, but do you guys think the HBO show will have a scene of Abby bashing the shit out of Joel's skull into a pulp?
That's the end season cliffhanger. Yeah,
season 2, 100%. Yeah, I can only
and
pray
then it just
that
gets
they
canceled.
Don't. I can only pray they don't do it the same way they did in the game, because I think that was
no,
just
I
not
hope they do.
Well, that's
I
a good,
really hope they do.
That's a really good question. If the show is this popular and this well-received, what are they planning after they finish this game story? Do you think with all the backlash from 2, they're going to follow that or change it or do their own thing or what?
I'm certain they'll follow it, which I think is going to be a huge disservice. They have a chance to like really flesh it out a lot more and build in a better way as opposed to just do...
I mean, they'll expand on it for sure. They absolutely will expand on it.
I hope they get rid of the golf club and Abby just Mike Tyson beats the shit out of Joel.
I am still just super shocked that you like the way The Last of Us 2 plays out, Jackson. You're usually on the side that's like, oh, this was just like out of nowhere shock for the sake of like a shock, which is exactly how I feel with the Abby killing Joel so early thing.
But it wasn't shock for the sake of shock. It set up the entire rest of the game. That's
but
not
there's
shock
still
the
no reason why it couldn't have built up to it as opposed to just come out of it like super aggressive out of nowhere like that. 100%, like there was a more effective way. This was just very, very much meant to be like another one of those iconic intros like Last of Us had, where it's like, wow, that was memorable.
Yeah.
This was crazy and unexpected.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that that's probably what the purpose was, but I personally just find it more compelling the way it's laid out currently.
That just blows my mind.
It's fine. It's not my, I'm not, I don't base my opinions on impressing you or anything, so that's fine.
Well, maybe you should start.
I get it to a degree. I just think it's also objectively poorly written. So I get where you're coming from, but I think it's not a good example of a way to do that.
It's fair. I didn't start this to change any minds.
I know what I.
Well, that's good because you didn't, Jackson. We're never coming to your stupid side. We're gonna stay on the right side of history.
You're on the right side.
Yeah,
I'll say that on YouTube.
I'll see you in season two, Jackson, of The Last of Us show.
Ooh, I hope now that they follow the second game for the second season so we can come back here and all of us just bitching and moaning and fighting. Oh, fuck yeah.
So, do we know how long the season really... is? Sorry.
And 9 or 8 episodes, I think. It's okay. Decent. It's like, each episode's about 50 minutes too, so it's a decent chunk.
The problem with HBO, I heard it was super successful. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's been super successful. Like, it's the largest, I think, launch of any new IP on HBO from what I read or something like that. Or the viewership was up 20%, which is the largest amount episode to episode. So I think the reception has been really well.
And it, which really is extremely good. Impressive because it has to compete with Velma right now too. So it's doing really impressive stuff.
What were you going to say, Kai?
I was going to say that HBO doesn't have the best record because HBO, you know, Game of Thrones, first few seasons, everybody loved it, but then the ending nobody liked. And then, what is Westworld still going on? Because I remember liking the first season a lot, but then the third season was such fucking shit. And I hope the same thing doesn't happen with the show, I guess.
Well, this first season, I think, is pretty faithfully adapting the entire first game. So I think they've got the framework, and if the rest of the story is adapted in the same way, then I think it's they're fine because the quality is great from the first two episodes.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I think by season 2 or 3, this is going to go down the gutter.
Well, season 3 is probably not going to be adapted from anything, so
that Kaya, would be is concerning. Is Westworld worth watching if I stop after the first season?
Yes. Just watch the first season.
Yeah, literally absolutely. Just stop after that.
Just the first season.
Hopkins is a lot of fun.
I have heard from a good number of friends that Westworld, like, it gets bad, but the first season is like a masterpiece, and I'm really interested to check it out.
It's first season really good.
Okay, I might watch it.
Alrighty.
Done.
Alright.
Positive note.
Yeah, Westworld season 1.
Was it a positive note?
Yes, here, I'll positive it out of the top with a cherry on top. Watch Rambo 4, nice. Watch Flight of the Phoenix, watch Flight, watch Con Air, watch The Last of Us, HBO, watch Westworld Season 1. There you go. You're welcome.
Cool. Awesome. And watch Abby beat zombies with her big Mike Tyson arms.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. No, actually, play that part it. Is Don't fun. Watch it.
Feel the haptic feedback. It's great.
Yeah, the rumble.
All right, thank you for listening to this week's episode. Patreon.com/theofficialpodcast for bonus content. Go check that out. There's probably a few bonuses in the past where we really went in depth on The Last of Us, I'm sure. We went through a period where we talked about that quite a bit. So if this was at all entertaining, go over to patreon.com/theofficialpodcast and learn more. Other than that, we'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone. Yep. Thank you.
Goodbye.